The presenting sponsor of today's podcast is Fifth Element CBD. Fifth Element is ultra-high milligram CBD focused on relief and recovery after a workout. They are specially designed for people with an active lifestyle, from weekend warriors to professional athletes to bucket list gym enthusiasts. Fifth Element, aka 5E, is full-spectrum high-milligram hemp to help you whenever, wherever you need it, whether it's after the gym or after work. Get yours today to feel better tomorrow by visiting 5ehemp.com and use the promo code MONSTER for 50% off. Yes, you heard that right. 50% off. Half off. That's 5ehemp.com and use the code MONSTER. Go to 5ehemp and get 50% off. That's the number 5, the letter E, hemp.com.
Welcome back to another episode of the Over the Monster podcast. As is the case every week, it is me, your host, Matt Collins. But we have a little bit of a shift this week. Brian is on vacation. He is enjoying the island of Martha's Vineyard for the week. And so, rather than take a week off, Jake, our friend Jake Devereaux, has decided to join me again for his second podcast of the week. And it's a little reunion for me and Jake. We used to do this every day. We haven't done this in a long time. What's going on, Jake?
Not too much, man. I'm pumped to be on the podcast. You know, just finished, I'm a teacher, so just finished my last day of school today. So feeling kind of rejuvenated by that whole thing and ready to be in baseball mode. So, and it's nice to hear that Brian has decided to go to the second best island on the Cape this weekend. So that's cool.
Well, Brian's probably not going to listen to this, which is good for you because he would be hearing about this comment. But we will we'll let him live in ignorant bliss. I've never been to either of those islands, so I have zero opinion on the matter. But
yeah, I have no opinion either. I just like to tease Brian, so you know,
don't we all?
I don't have the type of coin that it takes to to travel to Nantucket in Martha's Vineyard. So you know, I'm a Portland, Maine guy when I travel. So
that's absolutely right. Go north, not east or south. There, I don't know what they are from you.
Yeah, east, I guess.
All right. So that's our Brian update for the week. But thankfully, we're not going to spend too much time talking about Brian. We will be talking about the Red Sox, who have had quite the eventful last week or so. Been very up and down. We are recording this about an hour or so, hour and a half before Tuesday's game, so we don't know what's happening in this opener against the Braves, but the last we saw of the Red Sox, they were walking off the Blue Jays on Monday in a pretty wild game. But before we get to any of that, there was a little bit of roster movement before that Monday game. Red Sox have been shuffling like crazy through the bullpen, trying to find some fresh arms. Ryan Weber got the call on Sunday. Really had to eat just a terrible day for everybody on the Red Sox on Sunday. Gave up 11 runs, but did give them 5 2/3 innings and was rewarded by being designated for assignment, taken off the 40-man. But rather than getting another fresh arm, they actually went with the position player, called up Michael Chavis, and then they also made a minor trade with the Mariners to fill that spot in the 40-man. They acquired Yaxel Rios, who is a right-handed reliever, grabbed him from the Mariners for cash considerations. So a little bit of movement on the margins of the roster, which we've gotten used to over the last couple of weeks. But let's start with the Chavis part of this. I think that's easily the most interesting name on this list. You good with Chavis getting the call over Franchy Cordero, who's been mashing in Worcester since he's been sent down, or even Jaron Duran, who obviously people have been wanting to get called up since spring training? You good with Chavis getting that call?
Yeah, I am. And I'm not a big Chavis guy, as you know, Matt. I mean, we've talked about him ad nauseum over the years. But, you know, I actually think that what Chavis gives you with the bat is a little bit more predictable than what Cordero gives you, and I think that they're still waiting on Duran. I think they'd like to see a little bit more from him. I'd have been good if they called up Duran. That would have been exciting and fun. But, you know, Javis, it's crazy to say, could bring a little bit of offense to this team with the way that Marwin is hitting and, you know, the inconsistency from Dahlbeck. He's been better as of late, but, you know, Kike hasn't been so good. There's been a lot of kind of rough hitting at the bottom of the lineup. So, you know, I think if you can get anything out of Javis, that's a positive. I didn't even mention how bad Danny Santana's been as well. He hasn't been very helpful. So, you know, there's kind of a lot. And you know what? This could also serve as a little bit of a pre-trade deadline showcase for Chavis. See if, you know, other teams can take notice of him at all.
Yeah, I didn't really consider the trade angle. I think I've kind of... I mean, I could see him being traded at the deadline. It just seems like him and Dahlbeck both seem like trade candidates for the offseason to me more than the summer. But, I mean, it does make sense to give him a little bit of showcase there. I mean, I definitely would have rather have seen Duran. I know I wasn't expecting it. I know that they want to see more. The strikeouts are up. The defense can still use work. I still think that he's one of the 26 best players in the organization and should be up. But, like I said, that wasn't really something I expected. As far as Chavis versus Cordero, I don't think I really would have cared much either way. I'm definitely higher on Chavis than you are overall as a player. But I think Cordero, I don't know, it's weird. I'm not really high on Cordero, and I'm higher on Chavis. But at this point, I think Cordero might have provided a little more of a spark. Just if they're looking for some energy at the bottom of their lineup, something to kind of spark that group that has just been kind of stagnant for so much of the year. It feels like Cordero has more of that potential to me, but I don't think that there's that much of a difference. And I think the thing that works in Chavis's favor over someone like Cordero is just that he can play the infield and he can specifically play first base. You mentioned Bobby Dahlbeck. I think he's playing every day, whereas some of these other guys are not, but Dahlbeck seems to me to be the guy that I'm most concerned about. So Chavis can spell him, which I think gives him the upper hand. But like you mentioned, all those guys, whether it be Chavis or if Cordero had been called up or Dahlbeck or Christian Arroyo or Marwin Gonzalez or especially Danny Santana, it just feels like at least one of them is just holding the seat warm for Duran. So I don't even know that this is going to be a long-term call-up, but I can't really complain. Especially, I mean, Chavis was the best hitter in the entire organization last week, so they're getting him while he's hot, so you might as well give him a chance. Give him a chance in Atlanta. He's a Georgia kid, so I guess I see it.
Yeah, also gives us a chance to see some electric press conferences from Chavis, so he's been
I don't know that Chavis is getting the press availabilities, but unless he gets a big hit somewhere, I'd be surprised if Chavis is one of the guys getting the press availabilities. We'll see.
I have enjoyed his candor, you know, at different points when he's been
personality wise, he's definitely like top, I don't know, five on the roster right now. I mean, he doesn't get much better than him. It's just you got to play to be able to get your face in front of the microphone.
Yeah, he is not JD Drew. He is not Andrew Benintendi. He has some real charisma.
I think Benintendi had a little charisma, not as much as Chavis, but a little more than JD Drew. I think there was a little distinction there. Yeah. Were you surprised that they didn't just go with another fresh arm and keep that shuffle going under the bottom of the lineup? They actually went back to a four-man bench. Did that surprise you?
Yeah, it did, actually. In particular, because we're drawn to the close of this 17 games in a row stretch, and the way that the starting pitching has been getting rocked lately in June, that definitely did surprise me. You know, a couple of the names that I had an eye on that I thought they might add was like Caleb Ort. I thought they might add him, bring him up. Kevin McCarthy was another one I was looking at. Marcus Walden, maybe. Somebody like that I was kind of looking. Or
John Schreiber, too, was another guy that has been pitching pretty well down there.
Yeah, Schreiber. And the other guy I was thinking is just like bring Phillips Valdez back up without, you know, doing anything.
Well, I don't think they could do that. don't remember when he got sent down. They have to wait 10 days to bring him back up unless somebody goes on the injured list.
Oh, yeah. It's only been five so far. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess that's right. They can't do that yet.
So that that was kind of what I was thinking, too. The more I thought about it, the more I think this makes a little more sense. I wouldn't be surprised if Chavis is only up for these next two games in Atlanta. The bullpen is relatively rested despite how bad the rotation's been. Barnes and Taylor were the only guys to throw on Monday. Nobody who's in the bullpen right now threw on Sunday, and Brandon Workman was the only guy currently in the bullpen to throw on Saturday. So for as bad as the pitching has been, they actually have a very rested bullpen, and obviously they're playing in Atlanta, so that means National League rules, which means pitchers hitting, which means having that extra bat on the bench for pinch hitting kind of comes in handy a little bit.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be super surprised if they bring up a pitcher, send Chavis back down, bring up, I don't know, Valdez should be able to come up at some point this weekend. Maybe call up Rios for like a day or two to bridge the gap and then send him back down for Valdez or something. To get that three-man bench back, which I don't really like the three-man bench, but it doesn't seem like nothing really indicates that they want to move on from the three-man bench in any sort of long-term sense, so the only thing that really makes sense to me is that they just are using this in the National League Park for a couple of days, and then Chavis will be back to Worcester, and we'll be back with that miserable three-man bench with the huge bullpen that they don't need because there's always some guy who doesn't pitch for like 2 weeks at a time. It really drives me nuts.
The three-man bench with no offense on it except for Kevin Plawecki, who's like the best bat on that bench.
That is sadly accurate.
Yeah.
God, I didn't even put that together, but yeah, I mean, Danny Santana doesn't need to be there anymore. Can we just move on from that? I
don't know. Yeah, that's Jaron Duran's spot. It's nice of him to keep it warm, but you know, it's come on, man.
I mean, literally anybody. Honestly, if they were going back to the three-man bench, I would not hate it at all if they just designated Santana rather than optioning Chavis. I don't think that's going to happen. Santana hasn't really played a ton, so I guess they can hang their hat on that, but there's just nothing I've seen from him indicates that he's going to be part of this team long-term.
That 2019 season from him is looking mighty fluky.
Yeah, that was the thing with the whole I don't know, I got called out for saying that people were excited, and I guess people weren't actually excited, but people were, like, looking forward to his call-up and, like, as something that could help the team, and it was, I don't know, it just always seemed pretty clear that he just kind of stinks. I mean, that's what it is. He's better than me, I'll give him that, but I don't think he's a major league player, and I don't know. We're getting off topic, but yeah. Danny Santana's spot on this roster is kind of wearing me thin.
Yeah, no, I agree.
So, with Ryan Weber, like I said, he really had to eat a really bad outing for the team. Did not really get a fair shake, was designated right after he pitched, which I think everybody kind of saw it coming, but it always kind of sucks to see a guy have to do that. But let's... Weber is part of the rotation depth, which is kind of a mess right now. Tanner Houck is going to start pitching at some point, I believe, this week, but he's still working his way back. He definitely wouldn't be able to come up to the majors right now. If one of the starters were to go down, say, someday this week, knock on wood, obviously, is Weber a candidate to come back up and take that spot, even after how poorly he pitched in that outing? Who would you look at to take that spot? Assuming Houck is still not ready, which he's not going to be for a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think you would turn to someone else, maybe like a Steven Gonsalves, add him to the roster. Maybe Kyle Hart, who apparently was dealing with some stuff last year or 2 years ago, I guess, when he wasn't very good. It was just last year. Yeah, it was last year. Wow, feels like 2 years. Either of those two would be a lot more interesting to me. I've actually seen Reynel Espinal pitch a couple times too. I would be more content with him. And then also, like, I think that there a bunch of more capable arms than any of the AAA guys down at AA right now who are kind of interesting. Like Josh Winkowski having himself a season. Cutter is not as interesting, and I'm not sure he's really a major league pitcher.
I think he's hurt right now, too.
Is he? Okay, I didn't know
he hasn't pitched in a while.
So I don't know. I guess, like, just on ability, if I was ranking them on ability, the guy who I'd want to see is Josh Winkowski down in AA. But I think that it would be more likely to be one of those other guys. I mean, the thing with Ryan Weber, man, is just he's not even a major league fill-in. You know, he is custom built to eat a turd sandwich and get blown up for 11 runs in a major league game.
One of the meanest things I've ever heard anybody say about another human being. But okay.
I mean, he's just awful. He is so bad. The stuff just does not play at all. It's just, you can't even fake it, man. You can't even run into an outing where you're like, oh yeah, this looks okay. Like, no, it's horrifying from the time he gets in the game.
He's had some, and I'll preface this by saying I also do not want to see Ryan Weber back up this year. He's had some moments over the last couple of years with the Red Sox where, especially out of the bullpen, I think it was last year or 2 years ago, he was actually like pretty decent in a long relief role, but his numbers got all screwed up by a couple of starts. But I mean, I agree with your general point. I don't think he's a major league pitcher, and he's a guy that you want on a team like the 2020 Red Sox that are going nowhere fast and just have... just need bodies. This year's team should not be having Ryan Weber. The issue is I don't really know that there's... Sorry, dogs are going nuts. I don't really know that there is much better answer there. I mean, I think Gonsalves is probably the guy I would go to. I have my questions about him, but I think his stuff at least plays up a little bit where I can see him having some success in the majors. One thing that's interesting about him is that they've been using an opener in front of him for his last couple outings in Worcester, and that's been kind of... That's definitely something that's piqued my interest because they haven't been doing that with anybody, so I wonder if that... I kind of think that is the plan, that they would call him up and throw an opener in front of him and then just hope that they can get four innings out of him, which seems fine. I mean, it's... Considering the other options, I think Daniel Gossett would probably be my second choice, which is not a great choice either. Matt Andrees, I think, was the guy that I would have assumed it would be, but he is not filling me with any sort of confidence that I want him in that role. Garrett Whitlock, I don't see them putting him in a starting role this year. They're going to try and limit his innings. So I think it would be kind of a patch and play, whatever they do, whether it be Gonsalves or somebody else, and maybe throw an opener in or only look for three or four innings for whoever they do call. But that is sort of a looming issue. I mean, the rotation has been healthy, and again, knock on wood, but if that changes before Tanner Houck comes back, the depth is a little rough.
Yeah, it is. And it's just, it's poor timing, I guess, that, you know, Tanner Houck and Connor Siebold, the two most obvious six and seven starters. Yeah, Brian Mata as well. You know, even Thad Ward going down, he would have been a long shot, but still, you know, their depth has really taken a hit. And I think I felt so much better about the depth at starting pitcher heading into this year, but it's just evidence. I mean, you can never have enough starting pitching. Yeah, I agree with you, though. I think that Stephen Gonsalves is the most interesting guy there. The walks have been a little out of control at Worcester this year, but I think this stuff is pretty good, and the reports on him have been pretty solid, so it'll be interesting at least.
Yeah, he was getting a little bit of hype at the alternate site last summer. I think that's kind of faded a little bit, but still, considering the competition, I think that's probably who you look at. So the other piece of this roster shuffle on Monday was Yaxel Rios coming over from the Mariners. Rios is not really a young guy. He's 27. He'll be 28 before the end of this month. He's bounced around the league a little bit, pitched 72 and a third innings in the majors in his career across five different seasons, has a 6.47 ERA. Any thoughts whatsoever on Rios? We don't really have to spend too much time on him. I figured you should get a mention.
Yeah, I don't have any thoughts other than, you know, there must be something that Bloom and them have seen on advanced metrics, whether he spins the ball well or, you know, I don't know, some attribute that they saw that they like that they think is a little bit of a ball of clay that maybe they can get something out of. He's still young-ish. He's 27, so and he throws relatively hard. So, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of interesting. Why not? It's cash. Yeah. Red Sox should be taking moves like this when they can. So I get no issue with it, but no, I'm not expecting anything.
Yeah, the cash is certainly not the issue. I'm assuming it's a minimal amount of money. He had been designated for assignment, so they were just kind of jumping ahead of the waiver line. So I will say about Rios, he has been very good at AAA this year in a small sample. He's got a 0.66 ERA in 13 two-thirds innings. He's got 17 strikeouts and two walks, which is obviously outstanding. I get the sense that he's probably not long for the 40 man. I would not be surprised if he's designated, I mean, within a week. Maybe not within a week. I guess they won't need that 40 man spot, but they're going to need some 40 man spots soon with Chris Sale coming back later this summer and Jaren Duran coming back whenever, and Ryan Brazier hopefully coming back at some point, and whoever else they may want to add, whether it be a Caleb Ort or somebody else. So they're going to need that 40-man spot. I feel like he's immediately on the chopping block, so I think they looked at him as a guy. I think they did probably like some of the stuff, but I also think they look at him as a guy that they can turn around and designate pretty quickly and probably keep him in the organization. So that's my expectation, which is not a very high one, but I would be surprised if somebody else was designated in front of him on this roster. I don't know who else would even be an option.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, it is kind of interesting. His career fastball velocity has been around 95, and this year it's up to 97. So that is something to watch for, at least.
Well, maybe he's using some of that sticky stuff.
Yeah, spider tack, man.
Which brings us into our next topic, which is the media running amok. The Red Sox rotation been one of the reasons why they have been hanging around first place pretty much all season, totally defying my expectations, most people's expectations, both in terms of health and performance. But then last, I don't know, 10 days or so, things have been bad. Nathan Eovaldi's Monday start notwithstanding, I mean, everybody's kind of struggling. Even somebody like Garrett Richards, who's getting pretty solid results, he's walking a tightrope every time he goes out. He's allowed double-digit base runners pretty much every start. They just don't look as sharp. They don't look as good. And this sort of snag in the road has coincided nicely with the league announcing that they are going to start cracking down on the aforementioned sticky stuff, the spider tech, the substances that I'm sure you've heard all about. League announced today that they're going to start handing out suspensions if they find stuff on pitchers. And with the timing of the Red Sox struggles, there've been some in the Boston media and national media connecting the dots and saying they must have been using the stuff and they're not using it anymore, and that's where the struggles are coming from. Is that at all fair?
Yeah, so I think it's completely unfair from the media, and I also think it's very lazy journalism to just go out and make that connection that, you know, because the rotation is struggling, that, you know, obviously they're cheating again. And, you know, it sucks because the easy thing to do would be to actually, you know, do your job as a journalist and go take a look at the readily available data and the spin rates that's provided by Baseball Savant. And make the connection. Like, look, you know, look at the rolling game spin rates. And if you see anything fishy, make that connection and bring that to light. But if you're seeing no connection at all, which, you know, Chad Jennings looked at this a couple days ago. Alex Speer looked at it today as we're recording this. There has been no connection. So there, I don't know. I don't buy that is the reason for the Red Sox struggles. I very much agreed with your article that you put out, that the simplest explanation is probably the truth. here that, you know, this rotation has been overperforming all year long. Martin Perez with a 3.09 ERA headed into his last two starts, probably not what he should be doing. Nick Pivetta, been walking a tightrope all year. E-Rod has not been himself all season long. So it's like, it's not a shock that in the toughest stretch of the season, probably, that they'll have all season, that towards the end of that tough stretch, you know, things start to fall apart a little bit. That's no surprise to me.
Yeah, so I think what I will say is that it is fair. It was fair for the thought to cross people's minds. It's fair for the Red Sox to get a little extra scrutiny. That's what happens when you bring Alex Cora back as your manager and you've had your own scandals. And that's part of the package. And I think Cora's obviously been worth bringing back. He's obviously helped the team, but that is part of what happens. And I think those two things combined with the timing of the struggles, it's fair for that thought to cross your mind. But you're right that you can just look it up. I mean, it's not that hard to just look it up. It would be a nice story, and if the spin rates supported it, that would be something to definitely look into and report on, and that would be fair journalism. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you can't just look at the struggles and say, this must be it, without looking at the data that is right there that shows that the spin rates haven't really changed. They've changed a little. I mean, Shaughnessy specifically called out Garrett Richards, whose spin rates have, like, only gone up since this has happened. I mean, it's just... It just doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. It is lazy, and I really think the explanation is just that they were never as good as they were, and now they're not as bad as they have been for the last couple days. I certainly expect Martin Perez to start pitching into the third inning at least forward. I don't think this is who he is either, but, I mean, it's something in the middle, and that's the way this happens. It's still, I mean, this is – we're coming off a 60-day – season, which I don't know about you, but it's kind of throwing me off that there's still so much left of the season. I mean, last season it was already over by now, so there's still a lot of time for regression, and we're gonna see guys regress to and from the mean in a couple different directions a few more times this season. It's just the way it goes. But you're right, I mean, it was just lazy journalism by, I think, mostly the expected people, some unexpected people. I'm not gonna call anybody else specifically other than Shaughnessy, but yeah, I mean, it was definitely lazy. But I want to stick with the rotation. Brian and I have done this a few times already. It's becoming a theme. We did it for a staff roundtable on the site earlier this year, but it is something that I continue to be interested in. This group of five in the rotation has been healthy all year. They've been the only five starters really all season, other than a spot start here or there from Tanner Houck. How are you ranking these guys right now for the rest of the season, 1 through 5?
Well, I'll preface it by saying that the way that I ranked them a few weeks ago for the roundtable was Richards 1, 2 was Eovaldi for me, 3 was E-Rod, 4 was Perez, and 5 was Pivetta. I would change that a little bit right now. Number 1 for me would be Eovaldi, who played the role of stopper for the Sox yesterday in a super important win. I think he's definitely been the most consistent guy stuff-wise. Number 2 for me would continue to be Garrett Richards, a guy whose stuff is good enough to get him out of situations. He's been walking a tightrope lately, but I still feel pretty confident in him. Number 3, that's where things get dicey, because I want to say E-Rod, but I think I have to bump him down a little bit. I actually feel a little bit better about Martin Perez than I do about him. And I know that they've both had their struggles lately. But one of the things that stood out to me from looking at the Chad Jennings article in particular was E-Rod's spin rates for his pitches, and basically, you know, a lot of things about his pitches, his velos and all sorts of stuff have been bananas. All over the place this year, and I feel like he's not really fully healthy right now, so it's tough for me to trust him going forward. Maybe it's not health, maybe it's just simply the fact that he didn't pitch at all last year, and I don't know how to place that moving forward. And then I'd put Pivetta, and I'd actually put E-Rod last right now, because I just have no clue what you are getting from him at this point.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd go that far. I mean, I think I agree with your general points. And more than anything, this exercise just has me kind of concerned about the rotation going forward. Because I'm finding reasons to worry about everybody. I think Evaldi has to be number one. I really don't think there's an argument in any other direction there. He's been their best overall pitcher this, or starting pitcher this season, and he's been their best lately. So, I mean, I think he's a clear number one, which in and of itself is a problem when you're a playoff contending team if Nathan Evaldi's your clear number one. But after that, I mean, I think you could make an argument for any order. I mean, I think for Rodriguez, the argument is that the peripherals have still looked pretty good. His stuff is still looking solid. It's just the command isn't there. Richards, he's working his way out of trouble, but my concern is that he's get into trouble, and the deeper we get into the season, the more worried I get just because he hasn't thrown this many innings. I mean, if he throws 6 2/3 in his next start, that'll be his highest inning total for a season since 2015, and we still got a long way to go in the season, so that concerns me a little bit. And then Pivetta and Perez, I'm just not really sure are that good. That said, I mean, I think if I had to do an order, I think I would go Evaldi, Richards, Rodriguez, Pivetta, Perez. But again, I mean, that last four, I think I could put in any order, and I could probably make an argument, and I would not feel very good about that argument. It's just kind of a mess.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's not like I have a gap in there at all. I have a gap, you know, there's a gap between one and two, and there's a gap between two and three. But then, like, you know, with those last three, man, just throw them in a bucket.
I don't even have that big of a gap between two and three, to be honest.
Yeah,
a little bit. I mean, a little bit, but it's really just the innings for Richards that scare me. It's not even anything to do with this performance right now. It's just the deeper we get into the season, it's uncharted territory for him, basically. Since, I mean, I lived in Massachusetts the last time he threw more than 76 1/3 innings, and that was a long time ago. That was 2015. So,
yeah,
that's concerning.
Yeah, wow, 2015. I was living in D.C. at that time. So, yeah, that is some time ago. I will say, though, the thing that I just keep going back to with Richards, though, is just the stuff when he is on. He is the pitcher who I've seen look better than any other pitcher, including Eovaldi, when he's been at his best. I think back to the start that Richards had against the Mets, where his stuff was just super crisp and that curveball was electric and the fastball was being located but also had that sick tail on the end of it. When his stuff is right, he is by far the best, I think, in the rotation.
I think I'd probably quibble with that. I think if everybody was at their peak, at least peak that we've seen this year, I might take Evaldi, but again, I don't think it's that. I don't think it's that far apart that it's worth the argument, and I think that is right. Generally, and that is at least compared to the other three, and that's why I had him number two. But even, I mean, same thing with Evaldi at number one. Having Richards as, even if we want to call him a clear number two, is a little concerning. But I mean, the other flip side of that is I've been kind of saying that about this group all season, and they still, this last little stretch not included, I mean, they've been very good for this team and a big reason why they're here. So they keep defying expectations. I don't know why they can't keep doing it from now. But obviously the big looming presence over this rotation is Chris Sale, starting to work his way back. He threw a bullpen in Worcester this afternoon. Still a little bit ways away. His return certainly not imminent, but shadows growing a little bit larger. We see his path on the horizon. Are they going to be able to sustain themselves until Sale gets back, or do they have to go get reinforcements soon before Sale gets back?
Well, I think if Heim Bloom is serious about winning this division, that he needs to get reinforcements before Sale gets back, and I think he needs to be very aggressive. And I think that you can keep both the vision that he has for the future, and add to this team. And I think he needs to be splashy. I really do. And I think it's gotta be Max Scherzer. And I know that that's like a pie in the sky thing, but when you look at the guys who are available via free agency coming up, you know, he's one of those guys that has just a half year left. So his price will be high, but it won't be as high as it should be for a guy like Max Scherzer. And he's a guy who you would want to keep in this rotation and sign moving forward for like a, you know, I don't know, between 2 and 4 year deal. And I think that, you know, that also is just such a death punch to the other teams in the division, you know, especially as we look at the Tampa Bay Rays potentially losing Glass now and the Yankees rotation concerns and, you know, Toronto has plenty of rotation concerns. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, can you imagine going into the playoffs with a healthy Scherzer, healthy Sale, and then only having to deal with some of the uncertainty behind that with the guys in that rotation? I just think that would be the move. It would be very Dombrowski, but I think that it would be a great move.
Yeah, I mean, very Dombrowski is not a bad thing. And Dombrowski did go out and get Max Scherzer. He was with the Tigers at that point, right?
Yeah, he did. Yep.
So it is literally Dombrowski move. A couple of things about Scherzer, or I guess really one thing about Scherzer that's concerning, and I don't know if you saw this because it just happened like an hour before we recorded. He just got put on the injured list with a groin injury.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem that serious, but muscle injuries are always a little bit concerning, especially someone of his age. So that does concern me, not to the point where I would say do not trade for Max Scherzer, obviously. But that is something to keep in mind. I will, just generally though, I do agree that they need reinforcements. I think Tanner Houck does play a big part in this. I've become a big Tanner Houck guy over the last year or so. And I think his return does legitimately change my view of the rotation at least a little bit. If one of these guys pitches their way out of it, like Martin Perez continues to just look like he's not a major leaguer for another 3 starts or so, I wouldn't hate Tanner Houck taking that spot in the rotation. So I guess they could wait a little bit in my mind, but not super long. And I do think they need reinforcements, whether it's Max Scherzer or whoever else is out there. John Gray, I've never really been a big John Gray guy, but I know he's a name that people have been throwing out in the rotation trade mix. But I do think they need somebody like that. Maybe a Germán Márquez, that would be a splashy move. That would cost a lot more. But
I like that name, though.
I'm just looking at their depth chart. It would probably cost more than Heim Bloom wants to give up, but... I think they definitely need rotation help, but is that the number one need for them at the deadline to you?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think what that allows you to do is take one of these guys out of the rotation, and the guy who I would take out of the rotation would be Pivetta. I think his stuff would play best in the bullpen. And I think that would give you, you know, another arm there. You could also use Sale in the bullpen until he's fully ready to come back into the rotation as well. So I think it gives you a lot more flexibility. I think the only other need you can really pinpoint on this team would be like first or second base. Second base, I just don't think is worth upgrading. So I think if you were looking at anything, it would be first, and Keaton and I were talking about Germán Márquez as well, the name you just mentioned, and we were thinking about a Germán Márquez, CJ Cron package coming from the Rockies, because, you know, he's only got like a half year left on his deal there. Been a decent bat for them, but at the same time, like, I don't know if CJ Cron's going to be better than Bobby Dalbec, especially as he continues to work on things and figure things out. And I'm not that worried about the Red Sox offense. Like, would it be nice to have another bat? Yes. But, you know, why not ask, if you're going to deal with the Nationals, why not ask for Josh Harrison or, you know, some other veteran type guy like that? I wouldn't hate getting another veteran bat into this mix, but I don't think it needs to be splashy. It's the secondary move to me.
I mean, I think that makes sense. I don't think it's going to be as easy to transition any of these starters out of the rotation. I don't think Pivetta is going into the bullpen very quietly. He has a history of hating going to the bullpen. I mean, with the Phillies, he was vocal about that. He believed he was a starter, and I mean, he's put up good numbers this year. I don't really imagine that going very well, to the point where I don't even think they would do it right now unless he really struggled for his next few starts. I think it would be Perez leaving the rotation, and I don't think that's a really easy transition. And I mean, it might even be a DFA rather than putting him in the bullpen, and I don't know that they would do that. So I mean, I think the rotation probably is the biggest need, but I think it's a little more complicated. And I think first base, I don't know. I mean, part of me thinks that, like, just go get another bat and, like, really lengthen the core of this lineup in a year where nobody can really hit. Adding another star-level bat to the lineup could really make this group special. And the name I have in mind, and this is something I brought it up last week very quickly, and I still haven't put a ton of thought into it, so I may change my mind when I put more thought into it, but Joey Gallo is a guy that I've been thinking about who could fill in at first base in the short term, and then longer term, he could move to a corner outfield spot, or he could move to DH. Or, I mean, he's flexible enough in places where the Red Sox are probably going to need help. And I mean, he obviously has otherworldly power. He's an on-base machine. He's walking 19% of the time this year. I think he would add an element to this lineup and really bring it. I mean, they're already pretty elite as a lineup. I mean, this would solidify them as one of the best lineups in baseball. So I don't know that it's the biggest need, but it seems easier to me to maneuver, and I do think it would bring them up another level, even if it's not necessarily the way that makes the most sense.
I don't hate that move, but it would have to be for the right price. I think that's
the thing, and he's under control for next year as well, which will add to the price. And I don't really see Heimblum making a deal like that, but just in my dream world, I think it could make sense for the right deal.
You know, I just don't know how they value him with a year left on his deal. He's not having like an overly impressive season, especially for Joey Gallo's standards. You know, if they were to take like 4 or 5 years of Bobby Dalbec for 1 or 2 1.5 years of Joey Gallo, like, yeah, sure, I would make that move, because I
probably
think
need to throw a prospect in there too, I would think.
Yeah, I don't know. If it was like Dalbec and Ryan Zephyrjohn, sure. Like, I'd be very happy with that. But I don't know what that cost is going to be. Sometimes these guys get moved, and we look at the deal, and we're like, wow, that's way less than I thought it was going to cost. And sometimes it goes the opposite way. So it's just impossible to read from a year-to-year basis as to how clubs are going to be valuing these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think my more general point was just that I think if the Scherzer price isn't there, or if Scherzer's health is messed up or whatever, I'm not really super enamored with the starting pitching on the trade market, at least right now, that I've seen. And so I might just try and zig wherever else is zagging and just add a big bat. But again, I mean, if it's not Gallo, there's probably another one out there that I just haven't thought of yet.
I wanted to ask you, Matt, so with Scherzer being the only real big name that it seems like an obvious trade candidate at this point, you know, the price could get high for a guy who even has just a half year left on his deal, but he's also the only impact guy. How high of a prospect piece would you be willing to go to get his services for the rest of this year?
I mean, it's, you know how much I love putting together trade packages.
Who's off the table for you?
Off the table would definitely be Casas, obviously. Casas, Downs, Duran, Jimenez. Probably Tanner Houck, Connor Siebold, Aldo Ramirez. I've always been a big Brian Baio guy. I mean, I'm just looking at Sox prospects rankings right now. I probably go to 13-14, Ronaldo Hernandez, Jay Groom is probably where I'd start, really being willing to do it. I don't know if that would be enough or not. And I mean, I think I would at least consider some of the guys above that, Thad Ward, Brian Mata, Noah Song, guys with some injury history I would think about, but I think I'd really be comfortable starting in that 13-14 with Hernandez and Groom.
Okay.
Is that too much for you?
No, no, definitely not. I mean, I'm kind of the opposite. I would go... I think the benefit of this move is so large that I would go as far up as somebody like Jeter Downs. The only two guys who I would not include in a deal like this would be Casas or Jaren Duran for me.
Really? No, I definitely wouldn't give up Downs or Jimenez. I could probably talk about anybody after that. I don't think I would touch the top four for Scherzer. It's the groin thing does worry me a little bit. I mean, muscle injuries with a guy who's approaching 40 is a little scary to me. But I mean, again, I mean, there's going to be time between now. I'm assuming the Nationals would take those trade ducks down to the wire unless he really blew them away. So we'll have time to figure out the health, and my opinion may change there. But as of now, I would not touch Downs or Jimenez for a rental for sure.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I definitely don't think Bloom would either. And this is, I'm not generally on the same wavelength as Bloom, but I think in this case I am. All right, so let's move on from the rotation a little bit. I know you and Keaton talked a lot about the draft in the last show. We're not going to spend too much time on that, but I do want to get to Fangraph's first mock draft. Very interesting write-up in the Red Sox section, which was actually maybe the shortest in the entire mock draft, but packed a punch. So Kevin Goldstein, former Astros front office man, he said that word is that Jack Leiter of Vanderbilt, at one point this spring, looked like the number one overall pick, is trying to price himself down to Boston and wants to land there, and that Boston will love that as well. What he means by pricing himself down is that he's throwing out massive bonus demands for the top three teams, hoping that they'll get scared and let him fall to number four. That doesn't always work, but it's a strategy that players use sometimes. But that is interesting. Is that the ideal scenario for the Red Sox? Is that Leiter kind of games it to get down to number four?
I think so. I'm like one of these Vandy boys or bust. We ranked our options there, and you know, for me, it would be Leiter, Rocker, then Henry Davis would be my preference. But Leiter for me is the clear favorite. And of course, you know, just like is the OTM curse here, we record our draft episode and then this mock dropped the next day. But yeah, it was really nice to see that blurb. And I don't blame Leiter. I mean, he's a college arm. He obviously wants to come into a better situation than those top three teams offer. The top three teams in the draft, if you haven't looked at this, it's Pittsburgh, it's Texas, and then it's Detroit. You know, three teams that are still very far away. And if you're someone like Jack Leiter, I mean, you look at the Red Sox system, you're immediately going to be the top pitching prospect, and you're, what, 2 years away from the major leagues if everything goes well? So I think that's a really ideal situation. Good offense, good core, good organization. So I buy it, and it seems awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely good. I don't know that I have Leiter number one. Really has nothing to do with Leiter. I just get scared a little by pitchers. Similar to the way I get scared by pitchers, and Henry Davis is kind of throwing me for a loop a little bit as well. I'm not even sure if I would want him to stay a catcher or not. Not that I would complain if they did get him, because he's an elite bat and Leiter looks like an elite hitter. I think I would like, in an ideal world, and by all accounts it's not going to happen, I think I would like one of the top two high school shortstops in Meyer and Lawler. They just seem like safer profiles. I'd rather have the up-the-middle infielder. But that said, I mean, if we're talking about the college players, which it seems like the Red Sox have pretty much only been connected to college players for at least the last month, I think Leiter would probably be number one on my list, and I would be absolutely stoked if that actually happened. Like I said, this doesn't always work for players. Leiter can say whatever he wants, but when push comes to shove, if, say, Detroit takes him at number three, I really don't think he's going to turn down whatever bonus he gets from them, unless it's like consulting, obviously. But I mean, I don't think he's going to go back to school. So we'll see if it works out. But I think that it's at least encouraging that one of the top prospects, if not the top prospect in the draft, is according to Fangraphs, at least, actively trying to get on the Red Sox. I mean, that bodes well for them as an organization.
Yeah, it definitely does. I should mention that, you know, when I said Leiter was my one and Rocker was my two, I'm assuming that Marcelo Meyer and Lawler do not get to the Red Sox. I agree with you that those guys would be ahead for me.
Meyer, probably not. Lawler, I've seen kind of all over the place. I've seen Lawler fall down to like five or six in a couple mock drafts. So the top of this draft is very strange, which I think was expected after last year got totally wiped out for amateur ball. But I think we're going to see a couple surprises in the top few picks.
You still can't convince me that Texas is going to pass on the local kid.
I don't think so either, but I've seen enough mocks that I'm at least keeping an eye on it. But yeah, I mean, it kind of makes too much sense. I actually, honestly, a couple months ago, I was pretty convinced that the Red Sox were going to get Frelick from BC. I no longer think that's going to happen, but
I would hate that.
I would too. I thought they were going to do, when there was like whispers of them going under slot, I was like, oh, they're going to get Frelick and people are going to forgive them for going under slot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't worry. I don't think it's gonna happen. Couple other things before we finish out. Josh Taylor and Adam Ottavino are kind of set up to be the primary seventh and eighth guys, kind of forming the bridge to Matt Barnes. Is that a duo you can see sticking in that role the whole year? Do they need to go get somebody else for the bullpen? Does somebody like Nick Pivetta slot into one of those spots potentially? I mean, how do you see the bridge to Barnes kind of shaping up as the year goes on?
I'm totally confident with that as the bridge to Barnes for the rest of the year. I cannot believe the complete 180 I've done on Josh Taylor. He is just, I've never seen a pitcher turn it around quite as much as he has. You know, the first month of the season, I wanted to DFA the guy, and now he looks like one of the best pitchers in baseball. I can't imagine how much you're enjoying this, Matt.
I mean, I'm a big Josh Taylor guy. I am a little concerned about him looking forward. I wrote about him a couple days ago. There's some issues with his fastball location, but Cora's done a very good job of making sure that he's facing mostly lefties, even with the three batter rule. And he's been holding his own against righties too, but it's been a little more shaky, it's looked a little less sustainable. I'm a little worried about him as a top three bullpen arm. I don't really think that puts them in a good position. I definitely think he has a role in the bullpen going forward, but I do think they need somebody I feel a little more comfortable with stepping up, whether that be, I mean, I could see that being somebody in the organization, whether it be somebody like a Pivetta, although I already said I don't really see that happening, or a Darwinson Hernandez or a Salamora. I think those guys have a skill set that I just find a little more sustainable in that late inning role. I also think, I mean, they should at the deadline they don't need to go get the best reliever on the market, but go get a solid seventh inning guy to add to the mix. I mean, I like Josh Taylor, but I don't see him as a top three guy, even as well as he's pitching right now.
Yeah, it's fair to expect him to regress a little bit from being unhittable right now, but that slider, man, it is such a weapon at this point.
The slider is no issue. It's the fastball that I'm a little worried about, but yeah, the slider is disgusting.
Yeah, it's a great pitch, and it's nice to see Adam Ottavino turn it around. It's like kind of funny how the bullpen figured itself out just as the starting rotation was going into the tank.
I mean, that's what happens when with good teams, and you need a little luck and timing to work out, and it's worked out for the Red Sox. It's just one of those things.
I'm interested, though, why didn't you mention Whitlock in that mix?
Whitlock is, I don't, unless they change it, and it's nothing to do with the skills, I just don't think they want to use him on back-to-back days, and I don't think that you, especially once we get into the stretch run, I don't really think you can be one of the top three if you're kind of being used with kid gloves like he is. And, I mean, to be clear, I don't have a problem with them treating him like that. He's coming off Tommy John, so it makes sense, but the workload is really the concern there more than anything.
Yeah. That at bat versus Guerrero a couple days ago was really impressive with those three straight fastballs. Just his fastball, he gets so much extension. Eck was talking about it on the broadcast. I mean, it probably plays like 101, 102 with how much extension he gets.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like I said, I'm totally in on the skill. It's more just the way they're using him more than anything else.
Yep, that makes sense.
One last thing before we get into a couple listener questions. All-Star voting, first round of All-Star voting was released this week. Unsurprising, the Red Sox have two starters as of right now on the left side of the infield, Xander and Devers, both leading their positions. Anybody else that should be starting, or is it just going to be them two?
I think you could make a case for JD, but Shohei Ohtani exists. Yeah. So that's going to be pretty tough. And then Verdugo's probably played enough to have, or played well enough to have his name be mentioned in the mix, but I don't think he's quite starter level.
How do they do the all? I should absolutely know this, but I don't. Do they do all-star voting outfielders by position, or is it just three outfielders?
I think they do it by position.
I have no idea what position Verdugo would be. He's been all over either. The place. That's a tough one. But I mean, I think, to get to the question, I think you're right. It is just those two. Martinez absolutely playing well enough, but yeah, I mean, you can't overcome Shohei Ohtani. I mean, he's the star of baseball right now, and well-deserved. So Martinez will make the team, but he won't start.
Do you think he's the leader for AL MVP right now?
Probably. I mean, he's definitely got the narrative going for him. I think I would probably lean towards Vlad, but if the voting happened today, I think it would go to Ohtani.
I would think it would be Ohtani as well. You know, I had a friend actually who worked for the All-Star game, one of the polling places, so the ballots, they count the ballots that would come in. He had this job during high school, and it is a ridiculously corrupt and unscientific process. So,
well, I mean, I already knew that. Remember the Royals, whatever that was, like 5 years ago, 10 years ago? It is what it is.
It's a ridiculous process. So, it's a miracle any team gets starters in, like the Red Sox. I don't know. It's just, basically what he said was that, you know, from big teams, they would get like actual fan ballots, and from small market teams, they'd get like neatly packaged, all punched through by a computer ballots.
So. That kind of rules. I mean, if you're willing to go to that lengths to vote somebody at the All-Star game, go for it, man. I'm not going to fight you. I'm absolutely not going to cast a single vote for the All-Star game, but if you want to do it, you can go right up. Yeah. All right, so a couple of listener questions. We already kind of talked about this. Angel Rondon asked, will the Red Sox need a first baseman by the deadline? And if so, who do they pick up? Do you think they will add some? Do you think Bobby Dalbec will be replaced, or is he the first baseman for the rest of the year?
I think it's a true coin flip here. I'm going to lean no. I think that they don't replace him.
I agree. I think if they do replace him, it's in the organization, whether it be Gonzalez, Chavis, Santana in a weird world, maybe in Tristan Casas if something goes crazy, although I don't really think that's going to happen. But as much as I would like to see that move happen, I think it's going to be Dalbec.
Yeah.
And then last question from VLTC. Say Matt Barnes finishes the year at roughly his current pace. What kind of contract does he get, and do you want the Red Sox to give him that contract?
Oh, God. This is custom for you, Matt.
I mean, I hate this.
Yeah, I think he gets a 3 or 4 year deal after this year, and I think it's pretty high money, and I don't want the Red Sox to give it to him.
What did Liam Hendricks get?
He got like 4 and 50 or something.
He got 3 and 54.
3 and 54.
So yeah, Barnes isn't beating Hendricks.
No.
I'll say he gets 2 plus an option. I don't know what the rest of the class looks like. I don't know if he's clearly the best or not. I'll say he's going to get 232 with like a vesting option or something. I would give him that, but I don't want them to. It's been very hard being a Matt Barnes fan with him in arbitration. I cannot imagine what being a Matt Barnes fan will be like if he gets a big contract and does not pitch well. So if he gets a big contract, I just, for my own sanity's sake, I would like it to be somewhere else.
So yeah, I can go to the National League.
Yeah, go. Go. So people don't bother me every time he throws a ball. All right, well, that is going to do it for today's show. Jake, thank you for hopping on for us this week.
Of course.
You can subscribe to us on any podcast provider that you may listen to. Please leave us a rating and a review. Tell your friends about us. You can follow us on Twitter. I run the Over the Monster account at Over the Monster. Jake is at Dev Jake. And you can find all of our writing at overthemonster.com. And we'll be back with you next week.